Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I would say anytime an article has the words how to bet dot, dot, dot in it, you know, those three words, like how to bet such and such, how to bet on this team, how to bet on that, I'm going to click on it. I'm a sucker for that kind of thing, and I really like to gamble. CBSSports.com, I think they're doing this for all 32 teams, but when I was just hitting the old Google machine looking for some Texans material yesterday, it popped up how to bet the Houston Texans in 2025. CBSSports.com has the recommendation here on how to take the bets that are out there available for the Texans. You know, they're, I think, 35-1 to win the Super Bowl, 25 or 28-1 to win the AFC. They're the only team in the AFC South where they are favored to actually make the postseason this year. It would be, according to the odds makers, a surprise if any of the other three teams in the AFC South made the postseason. The Texans are set up to do some good things this year. Win total, 9.5. They've got some props for C.J. Stroud. What are the best bets for the Houston Texans this year? We'll get to what they say, and we'll give our opinion on that. But they lay this out, Seth, and I'm curious if we agree or disagree, if you agree or disagree on some of these. Before we get to that, like a couple interesting factoids I was unaware of. Probably had heard this before, but it didn't really pop up for me on my radar. C.J. Stroud and D'Amico Ryans are only the third QB head coach duo ever to win a playoff game in each of their first two seasons. I knew it was rare. I didn't know it was that rare that they're only the third ones to do that. As a QB head coach pairing, win a playoff game in each of their first two seasons in that role. That's impressive. I think sometimes we get caught up here and like they haven't gotten out of the divisional round, and rightfully so. They need to. D'Amico knows that. He said that. But it is an illustration of like, boy, this rebuild did get accelerated pretty quickly from where they were in 2022.
Yeah. Who are the other two?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm sure AI probably knows. If I were to AI,
what year was Roethlisberger drafted?
He was. It's not. Well, 2004. I bet it.
Oh no, because Tomlin was 2007.
He was with Cowher.
Tomlin went
for a bit.
That is impressive. Yeah, I always like with stats like that. I always like to know exactly who the other two are because it loses its luster when you know CJ is rookie year. There would always be these things like no quarterbacks other than Tom Brady, Peyton Manning,
and Gardner Minshew.
CJ Stroud and Gardner Minshew have done this.
Gardner Minshew was always the one that spoiled the party on any rookie stats for CJ. I'll try to find it. So I thought that was interesting. And subconsciously I knew this, but the Texans are still the only team to never make a conference title game. It's not that they haven't made it. It's they're the only team that's never made. Granted, they've only had 20 years to accomplish it compared to all these other teams. And I'm like, Cleveland has sucked since they came back into the league. Oh no. Bernie Kosar got them to a couple conference championship games back in the day. Might have gone to a Super Bowl had it not been for Ernest Biner fumbling a football against the Broncos back then.
I'm reading the I'm listening to the Belichick book, The Art of Winning.
Who's reading
it? And I was kind of pleased, yet also a little nervous about the fact that Bill Belichick himself is narrating it. And it's it's not a great book, man. It's
really?
Got good stuff in there, but it's like he's stuck somewhere between trying to be a motivational business book giving advice to business people versus kind of semi autobiography, but not really much like good. There's some good nuggets, but as far as he should have got, I don't think he got a ghostwriter on it. It feels like Bill Belichick.
He wrote it.
It feels like it. If not, the ghostwriter sucks.
How is he as a reader on an audiobook?
He's all right. I mean, there's times where you can tell he's really working to try to be demonstrative or show emotion. It's I'm not crushing it. I'm gonna read the whole thing because there's some really good nuggets in it. But you got to labor to get to the nuggets.
Yep. All right. So this piece talks about reasons to back the Texans and reasons to fade the Texans, bet against them. The reasons to back the Texans that they bring up in this article is one, D'Amico Ryans as a head coach has established a pretty high floor for this team. When you're looking to bet the over-under on wins, the first thing you're looking at probably is, okay, injury can make a team bottom out, but is there a reason other than injury that this team could bottom out, assuming C.J. Stroud stays healthy? And their determination is no. They built a pretty – they filled some of the holes on their roster. D'Amico Ryans has shown himself to be a good coach in close games, which matters between you trying to make that distinction between a 6-win team and a 10-win team. You got to win a lot of close games. Do you agree with that, that D'Amico's established a pretty high floor for this team?
Yeah, I think anytime you have a good defense and no reason to believe that the defense is going to take a step backwards and all of a sudden be a bad defense. Mm-hmm. Anything could happen. You know, maybe they don't produce as many turnovers this year, what have you. But they have a very, very solid defense. So it's hard to suck if you've got a really good defense. Some teams figure it out and find a way, but it's harder.
Second reason to back the Texans, the defense could be elite this year.
Yeah.
Tough to argue that one, against that one.
Yeah, it is. And again, a lot of people point that turnovers are kind of, sometimes there's a little bit of luck involved. But that's more especially when you talk about recovered fumbles, because there is a lot of luck involved in recovering the actual fumble. But they're an opportunistic defense by virtue of having players who are opportunistic.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where, like, C.J. Gardner-Johnson has been very, very good at taking the ball away the last couple years. So I would expect them to have a pretty good turnover ratio this year.
Okay, reasons to fade the Texans. Offensive line. That is fair.
They're very fair. Yeah. Very, very fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, there's a lot of the things about right now. I try to be as open as possible about I have no idea about Nick Haley. I'd like to be optimistic about him. I like certain things about his resume. I love the things he talks about. But we just flat out have zero clue whether he's going to be a good offensive coordinator or not. And that filters down to the offensive line. And does he make it simpler and easier for those guys to just go out and play football and have them in the right positions? A lot of the offensive line questions go straight back to, all right, does Nick Haley know what he's doing? Did Caserio get guys that are credible enough to be part of a solid offensive line?
Yep.
So yeah, that's very, very fair.
The other reason to fade the Texans, I don't agree with this. I mean, I guess I agree with the potential of this, but I don't agree that this is how it's going to play out. Here it is. The AFC South has the potential to be better than it's been the last few years, which would give Houston a tougher time banking divisional wins. Houston's three division rivals won 15 games total last year, but their win totals are collectively set at 20.5 this season, with Cam Ward and Travis Hunter joining the party. The Texans were a dead even team in point differential last year, very fair point, which works out to an 8.5 projected win based on their scoring, and with tougher competition, it's not too difficult for this team to slip to the 7-8 win range. All right, you're shaking your head a little bit. Do you agree with his assessment?
Looking at this as objectively as possible, I would just, okay, so PFF, when they grade the actual roster strength, and they do that, I believe, based on just their grades, the grades of the players that are projected starters and what have you. The only one that's in the top 15 in the AFC South is the Texans.
Yeah.
And I want to say the Texans are actually higher than I expected, like 7th or 8th.
You're talking about PFF here, right?
They were
7th on PFF.
7th, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the highest ranked one after them is 20th. And
Colts,
And the Titans are right down near the bottom at 31 or 32. The Jaguars are somewhere like 25th, I believe.
Yeah.
So obviously that can be flawed as well, but I think it's not my opinion of it. That matches the eyeball test. I just don't think those rosters are talented enough that they're going to necessarily be as a group way better than people expect. Even if Cam Ward's a huge X factor.
Yeah.
If Cam Ward ends up really being a revelation rookie of the year type of player, then he can lift up a lot of that roster.
Yeah.
And then likewise with Daniel Jones. Okay, can Daniel Jones, with actually some viable receiving threats, be the best version of himself? But the overall squads just aren't that good.
Yeah. The most important person in the division outside of the Texans from those three other teams to me is Liam Cohen. If Liam Cohen gets the best if he gets a version of Trevor Lawrence that we saw for a period of time in 2022, That's always been the biggest thing for me with the Texans winning the division the last 2 years. You take a look, you know, from the ivory tower and look down, go, okay, what's the biggest threat down here? If somebody can turn Trevor Lawrence into what a number one overall pick is supposed to look like, especially now they added Travis Hunter, they've got Brian Thomas Jr., who you said yesterday might be, you know, he might be the most underrated wide receiver in the NFL because he's operated off the grid in Jacksonville. I mean, they've got some pieces there, you know, enough to,
I think the,
to be a threat.
Liam Cohen did a really good job with the Bucs last year. He took him from near the bottom of a whole bunch of statistical categories and put him up near the top. Like, across the board, pretty much everything major about the offense was better. And most importantly, Baker Mayfield had the most productive season of his career.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could say, oh, Baker Mayfield with these weapons and that, that. Sure, great. That, you know who's got weapons? Trevor Lawrence.
Yes.
I mean, in his wide receiving core, depending on how well Travis Hunter does, he's going to have some weaponry there. But I think Baker Mayfield's just, I think he's smarter than Trevor Lawrence.
Yes.
I don't know if Trevor Lawrence could just really grasp how to be an NFL quarterback. He does some really impressive things physically at times, but he's still largely thought of as a one-read guy. And it's not like a first-read guy. And it's not like he hasn't had different offensive coordinators try to lift him up above beyond that.
Baker just seems like this version of Baker that we've now gotten in Tampa Bay. Because he has admittedly matured since his Cleveland days. I think getting sent to Carolina and L.A. to be a backup and be an afterthought probably woke him up a little bit. And I think he's matured. He seems like more of a guy that the guys rally around than Trevor Lawrence does. I know they were both number one overall picks, but I think they're both wired and they're certainly outwardly. I think they're very different personalities. Charlie Heck still lives in my building. And I ran into Charlie in the lobby of the building a couple weeks ago, and I don't think I'm putting anything out there that he wouldn't want me to say. He's in Tampa now playing for the Bucs. He had just gotten back from minicamp, and I asked him about Baker. He loves Baker Mayfield, and I don't think it was just platitudes. He really, really loves Baker Mayfield.
I'd be interested to talk to somebody from Cleveland about this. I never had an issue with Baker Mayfield's maturity in Cleveland. He played through. One of the reasons he lost his luster was because he tried to play through a really, really bad shoulder separation in his non-throwing arm, but that affected him. And they did. I mean, they were going into that season. People were arguing about whether he should get his third year extension or not. So I think for some of it with him is just partly bad luck being in the wrong situation and whatever else it might be.
Yeah.
I think that there's a Johnny Manziel effect in Cleveland where I think they're, because Baker's got a little bit of that same brash attitude of Johnny Manziel, that people sometimes conflate those two and they forget, like, oh wait, no, that was Johnny Manziel that never opened up his playbook in Cleveland. It wasn't Baker Mayfield.
Yep.
Okay.
Hey, by the way, the other two, thank you to our producer Colin today, in for Ben Gary, the other two first time head coach and rookie quarterbacks to win playoff games in their first two seasons. Chuck Pagano and Andrew Luck in Indianapolis. I think Bruce Arians was in there a little bit as an interim while Chuck Pagano was recovering from cancer, but Chuck Pagano was a head coach in name for sure. And then in 2008 and 2009, Joe Flacco and John Harbaugh. So,
Flacco, where he established himself as a elite quarterback. Yes,
yes, that's where the seeds were planted. All right, so what did CBS?
It's interesting that those are both defensive or special teams minded head coaches,
non-offensive head coaches.
For a rookie to go and win playoff games in his first two seasons, people always just, you got to have an offensive minded head coach to tutor the young fella. I don't know.
Thanks, Cowherd. The plays they recommend on CBSSports.com for the Texans. Not going to like this. Under 9.5 wins. C.J. Stroud under 3,825.5 yards passing. So,
that's gross.
No 4,000 yard passing season for C.J. And under 9.5 wins for the Houston Texans.
What was the specific number? 3,000 what?
3,825.5 passing yards.
So he had 4,108 his rookie year, and then last year, 3,727.
Yeah, so there's probably just, you know, kind of semi-splitting the difference.
I think they're going to be a more well-rounded offense this year, and I think CJ's going to be, I think he's going to be more efficient in terms of just hitting tight ends and hitting running backs.
Yeah.
Especially if Woody, Woody Marks is a huge X factor in this. If Woody Marks ends up being effective as a rookie, I think like he might. He's the one that makes it tips me up above. Oh yeah, well 4,000 yards at least. Like that should be the over under, but I would take the over on that one.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, I think you and I went through the schedule multiple times. I think we were around 11-6 for them, maybe 12-5, something like that. The one point they do make about the schedule, I'm a big schedule person.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I was saying taking the over on the yardage.
But on the yardage for CJ, sorry about that, yeah. I would take the over on both of these. Yeah, you're right. So the one point they make about the under with the schedule, and I'm a schedule nerd, so I have to at least entertain this, is that they play the NFC West and the AFC West crossover this year, which I think quarterback-wise are two of the best divisions in football. I mean, the AFC West is a quarterback gauntlet. Like Geno Smith is the worst quarterback in the AFC West. Bo Nix was great as a rookie last year. Yeah, he was really good. Justin Herbert, very talented. And then obviously Mahomes is in that division. And then the NFC West, you got Stafford, Purdy, Murray, and Sam Darnold playing for Seattle now. Those are pretty stacked divisions quarterback wise. And then you got all the travel that goes with it too. You know, like I think this past year, I don't know that they went you know, east, west of the central time zone. You're going to be going back and forth to L.A. multiple times, up to Seattle for a Monday night game that starts at 9 o'clock at night, Houston time. I think it's an easier schedule in so much as you're not playing the three games in 11 days twice like they were last year. But it is a schedule where you're kind of spanning the United States a little bit more.
I don't know. I guess that list of quarterbacks you read didn't strike fear in my heart like that maybe other divisions might, I suppose. So I guess if you're that sold on Kyler Murray and Justin Herbert and everybody, sure, Sean. Justin Herbert's operated really well in an offense where they tried to not use Justin Herbert as much as possible. Just like, hey, let's not let Justin Herbert hurt us. Yes,
there's an article, and I've got it in the rundown. I don't have it here, but maybe we can get to it later. They ranked all eight divisions based on the quarterbacks in the division. Yeah. And the AFC West was number one, and the NFC West was number two in that article.
Which version of Sam Darnold did they use? They just cherry-picked last year oh, sure, he'll do that again.
They went by some QB power rankings there on NFL.com and just took the rankings of the quarterbacks and then did the average, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Darnold was like middle of the pack, like 13th or something like that. So, yeah, fair point. They are looking at a better version. I don't think Sam Darnold, outside of Kevin O'Connell being there now, is the 13th best quarterback in the NFL. So that's a very fair point. The AFC South was last in that article. Yeah. They were eighth.
So can the Colts get out of Daniel Jones what the Vikings got out of Sam Darnold?
That's right.
Daniel Jones has been better at this point in his career than Sam Darnold was at the similar point in his career, but still.
All right, I had eyes on the Astros last night. I had eyes on the NBA draft last night. I've got thoughts on the NBA draft that you don't even need to have watched the NBA or watch college basketball to react to. Thoughts on the NBA draft last night, stream of conscious. We'll do that coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Karam Injury Lawyers Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I've got some stream of conscious thoughts on the NBA draft last night that you don't need to have watched the NBA draft yourself to follow along with, I don't think. So I wanted to share these, get your thoughts on them, Seth, and get the audience's thoughts. If you want to text 713-572-4610, we'll get to the text page here in just a second. My first one is, I think this is the first draft where it's been a Adrian Wojnarowski free draft experience. He left ESPN, I think, within the last year. I think it's been less than a year to go to be the general manager of the St. Bonaventure basketball program. That's his alma mater.
I think the entire athletic department, but whatever. He's working in college sports.
No, I'm pretty sure.
He's the general manager of men's basketball.
That's what I thought. Oh, okay, thank you. Yeah, he's the GM of men's basketball.
There. Go Bonnies.
Yeah, go Bonnies.
I'm just surprised that they actually could. I mean, that's their only big name sport there at Bonaventure, so that makes sense.
Yep. So he left, and so now Sham Sharania is the guy. He's the insider for ESPN that's covering the draft. I found it to be very pleasant. I like to have Twitter open during sporting events, including the NBA draft, and Adrian Wojnarowski made a cottage industry out of not just spoiling the next pick. He would tweet picks out that were two or three picks down the line. If it were at six on TV, he would be tweeting out who the eighth pick is going to be because he already knew who it was.
Yeah.
That's annoying. And you could say, well, just block him or mute him. Once it's out there, it's going to get filtered to you. If you're a basketball fan, it's going to find its way onto your timeline somehow.
Right. You know? Yeah. It gets to you.
Shams did not do that last night.
I didn't. And it's one of those things where, for me personally, I never knew whether to complain about it or not because I didn't know it was just because of my scattered brain that it bothers me. But like during the NFL draft, I get that way too. I kind of finally, the last couple years, just started watching the broadcast and trying not to check Twitter because all of a sudden people are just having conversations about picks that you haven't seen yet. And it's hard to keep everything in order and in sequence. Yep. So I'm with you. Although I think that Sham Sharania is just, he's probably better at, he doesn't have the pelts on the wall yet to just tell his employer, no, I'm going to do it the way I want to do it.
He doesn't, but that
he'll be doing it eventually.
It serves no purpose is my problem. It's just Woj showing off that he knows these picks. Like there's no, anyways, I don't want to get too bogged down on that one. Let me just say this. It made for a more pleasant watching experience for me and others that I saw seeing that on social media. My big question, as somebody who watched not a ton of college basketball and watched 0 minutes of Rutgers basketball this year, Rutgers had two of the top five picks in the draft. Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey. Harper went second overall to the Spurs. Ace Bailey went fifth overall, much to his chagrin. We'll get to that, to the Utah Jazz. How does a team have two of the top five picks in the NBA draft and finish 15-17 on the season? And by the way, they were 15-17, and they both played almost every game this year. The team played 32 games. Harper played 29 games, and Bailey played 30 games.
That's the type of stuff that gets a basketball coach fired. Yeah. Like, wait a second. All right, great job recruiting these guys, but how the hell do you? Get Mike Rice back in here.
Yeah.
Where's Mike Rice?
Mike Rice. Yeah good pull. Mike Rice. The answers I got. Spillane said the Big Ten ain't no joke. Indiana grad. Our guy Spillane. A few people said that, well, they were injured and they didn't play together a ton. They didn't have time to gel them. Like, they didn't play together. The team played 32 games, and each of these guys played over 90% of the games. Mathematically, they played together for at least 27 games. One missed three, one missed two. So, I don't know. That was an odd thing for me.
That's probably good for – that's a great advertisement, though, for Rutgers, the basketball program. I'm not actually even joking about how a coach will get fired because of stuff like that, but in college basketball,
these days,
where you can only do so much with guys for when you have them for 1 or 2 years.
Yeah.
Anyway, just the having the ability to bring those guys in is more important almost than your actual coaching ability.
Ace Bailey, reportedly, he has an inner circle that I don't know if they were giving him great advice. He was he didn't do any workouts for any teams. That was
trying
a big
to force his way down the board.
He was trying to manipulate his way to either Washington at 6, New Orleans at 7, or Brooklyn at 8. He got drafted by Utah at 5 and looked like he would have rather been sent to prison than go to the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, he did not look happy about it at all. I think that there's a good chance Utah is just looking at it as, okay, you know, he only wants to go to these certain teams, and maybe one of those teams we know is interested in him. So we don't, he's not long for our roster, and we'll see. Or you have a conversation with him and see why he's being such a D-bag about it.
Yeah. Somehow Utah managed to pass on a huge white guy that got drafted a little later by Brooklyn. Igor Demin is his name, from BYU of all places. How did Utah pass on a huge white guy that went to BYU? That's the sign of maybe it's a new age of Utah Jazz basketball. That would have been a big temptation for previous regimes there. I don't know if you saw the outfit that...
They probably caught him drinking a Diet Coke or something.
Something with a lot of caffeine.
Yeah.
Red Bull. I see those empty Red Bull cans on your social media. Trey Johnson was...
Red Bull. Red Bull would be like fentanyl to a Mormon.
Yeah.
Or an LDS. Yeah.
Exactly.
Diet Coke is you're living on the edge.
Exactly.
Right? No caffeine? No caffeine, right?
In Red Bull?
No, with Mormons.
I think so. I'm not totally sure.
I thought that for the longest time too. It was no caffeine at all.
I'm just taking your word for it. Yep. Trey Johnson of the University of Texas. I don't know if you saw his outfit, Seth. The outfits are always fun at the NBA draft. He's got I'll try to describe it here. If you were to just look at him from the waist up, you'd be like, this young man is wearing a really, really nice suit. If you were to then pan out, you'd be like, why is he wearing gigantic baggy suit shorts?
The capri pants.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. This has been a thing for like a decade now. Yeah. I don't know. Every now and then people are wearing the short pants or capri pants in their suits.
These are like the version. Remember the Fab Five at Michigan in the early 90s made the big baggy basketball shorts a thing? Those look like the suit version of the Fab Five shorts to me.
Yeah.
I think either way, I'm going to use this. I think Lopez and I are going to have our A&M Notre Dame bet this fall. They play each other again, and the loser will have to wear this suit to work for a day.
This might be the height of fashion right now. Who knows? I don't know. I'm not making fun of young people's fashion choices.
No.
Look at a picture of me with my mullet at any given
age. Nor am I. But do you agree that either Lopez or I would look stupid in this suit?
Oh, that you guys would have to wear that.
Yeah,
I didn't. Yeah, okay. Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the point.
You would both look so stupid.
Well, Trey Johnson like could pull it off.
But you guys look like you're trying so hard.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, I do think, though, too, you know what I discovered? I've never intentionally peacocked in my life, but one time we had to wear John Daly's pants.
Yeah.
Meltzer and I, for some kind of sponsor deal, had to wear when we were covering a golf tournament.
I remember.
We had to wear the John Daly pants.
Yeah.
And I had some stuff to do after the show. And I tell you what, I was walking around the grocery store, and I never got approached by more women in my life.
Really?
It's like I was at the gas station, and some woman came up to me, and she was like, oh, you are funny.
It's a talking point. It's a huge icebreaker, right?
Yeah.
Obviously.
And they think like, oh, clearly this guy's confident about something to be wearing these ridiculous pants. Yeah. I was like, yes, that's exactly me.
How did they fit on you?
I don't know. What do you mean?
Well,
I didn't like the material.
Here's why I ask. I got some too. I think it might have been the same tournament. They were doing stuff with the station. They gave me my pants, and this is a much fatter version of me.
Yeah.
Didn't fit. You just
couldn't squeeze into them?
Yeah. Or even if I could, I would look, you know, it would, you'd see everything down
they
there.
They fit all right, but they were kind of slim cut, but like with an old, like fabric-y type material.
Yeah.
It wasn't a smart fabric.
No, it was a little polyester
dry
in there.
Type stuff or something.
Yeah, it was a little polyester.
It felt like it was 100% thick cotton or something.
Oh, did it?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was
back then. Maybe they've changed.
So last night, when the Rockets selected 10th overall, and some of you may be like, whoa, Sean, they traded that pick to Phoenix. Yeah, but the NBA is so dumb that they have their league year start after their draft instead of before their draft, their business year. So none of these trades are official yet. So last night, the Rockets selected Kaman Malawach from Duke. He's a big man from Duke, good player. Knowing full well that he was going to be going to Phoenix, I tweeted out in all caps, "Welcome to Houston, Kaman Malawach," in all caps with exclamation points, just as a social experiment. I took the picture of him. They made him wear the Rocket hat, which is what they do with these things. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
Scott Van Pelt agrees with me on this, by the way.
I'm going to go the emotion I loved. I'm going to scream about the hat situation. It's not any – the league's too smart to have the moment that they've waited their whole life for be a picture in the wrong hat. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I don't know why they can't fix it. Jay, it's not your job to fix it. I want to ask you about the player.
Just move the draft 3 weeks later to after the start of the league year. It's not that hard. You have some buildup to the draft, too. Instead of 3 days, you'd have 3 weeks. But my tweet, Seth, was an experiment to see just how many people would correct me. Like, oh, no, Sean, he's part of the Kevin Durant trade.
Yeah.
He's going to Phoenix. There were even people like, there was even somebody that replied, Buddy still has this tweet posted, hadn't deleted it yet. It was a great social experiment.
He got you called Buddy. I applaud you for just being able to go out there and do that experiment just knowing full well that people aren't going to get it, and they're going to think you're an idiot
because
they can't pick up on sarcasm.
Yep.
Well, I was thinking about this. Oh, God.
Real quick, the fun part is you get listeners that stick up for you. So that's kind of fun. You know,
yeah,
like,
to joke, you idiot.
Yeah. That's kind of fun.
I was thinking about it. You know, we complain about how kids don't seem to get sarcasm these days, and in social media, sarcasm doesn't work anymore because there's so many people genuinely saying stupid things that it's hard to filter out if you don't know. Like, well, I don't know. I've seen a lot of other people genuinely mean what Sean just said. A lot of idiots out there. I don't know this Sean guy.
It's hard.
He must be one of these idiots. But I did. There was, when we grew up, it was almost like, it was 75% of the time you said something, it was sarcastic. And I remember spending way too much time trying to be like, is this person being sarcastic? I don't want to look like I don't get the joke, but so I'm just going to assume they're being sarcastic.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know what? I applaud these kids for not having a hint of understanding sarcasm or irony.
Oh.
Just go forward with your life and never take anything as a joke ever again. It's made everything so damn delightful.
It is hard. If you feel like you're walking on eggshells all the time on social media now, are they serious? Are they not? Is it, the big thing is this true or not? Okay, is this a real news source here, or is this the rumors? Hey, here are the rumors.
I don't, you know? I'll tell you what, man. I started a few months ago, really genuinely try to just, on any kind of news, like if I see something pop up onto my timeline that's a controversial news story or something, I try not to consume anything more on Twitter, and I go straight to long form articles.
Yes.
And yes, people argue about bias of this or bias. I try to find as well-rounded the coverage as I can of it, and it's a lot more. It's just nice.
Yeah.
You don't see the comments and everything,
yeah,
and you can kind of feel a little bit more educated about stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's not
nice. Like, in the events always suck, but it's still. It feels less crazy.
Well, so yeah, it's you know, the way we grew up consuming news. You know, it's not freakish.
Okay, you go into like, okay, the Iran bombing. Yeah. I mean, if you try to consume that on Twitter, immediately you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they're lying about. Oh, but they're lying about
it's
this.
Crazy.
Wait, but why are they lying about that?
It's wild.
You can't. You got to just try to.
And something like that just gets curated to everybody. Like, I have one of the least political timelines ever. I couldn't.
Yeah.
The Iran stuff was all over my timeline that
day. Yeah.
Last one, real quick, because we got to get this in. Jay Billis was on the studio desk duties last night for ESPN. I think he's great. I think he's one of the best ESPN employees at their respective job. He's awesome on college basketball. He had a great line about Kevin Durant. He said that Kevin Durant's going to kill the Rockets' offensive rebounding numbers because he actually makes shots.
I know. We got no ops. Yeah. We need more ops, KD.
That's right.
Stop selfishly making these baskets.
Oh, man. All right, so we got a little bit of news yesterday about Jeremy Peña and his contract talks with the Astros. He signed with Scott Boras. Does this make you feel better, worse, or way worse about Jeremy Peña's chances of re-signing here in a couple of years? We'll have that for you. I'll have a little Astros talk coming up next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Fly ball right field. Cam Smith comes in a few steps. 2-0 final. Hayter, 21 straight saves to start the season. That matches a franchise record. Dave Smith in 89. And now the lefty Josh Hayter in the record books as well. 1-0 last night, 2-0 tonight. The Astros, going back to last year, have shut out the Phillies in 28 consecutive innings. And Blummer, another series win, this time against a very good Phillies team.
Yeah, that's true. They clinched a series win. They haven't lost a series in a long, long time. The Astros, they could lose today. I don't expect them to. Hunter Brown is on the mound, but they could lose today, and this will still be a series win against a very, very good Phillies team. 1-0 two days ago, 2-0 last night. And Josh Hader, with a perfect slate this year when it comes to saves, The ironic thing about the Astros, Seth, like, they really don't like to dip into free agency to bring guys in. You know, they'll make trades. They like to go with the homegrown guys. They like to, if it is free agents, it's usually guys that are kind of on the margins a little bit, try to get some deals. The times they've dipped their toe into bigger ticket items so far, like, you know, 3 years, $57 million for Jose Abreu, disaster. 3 years, $60 million for Christian Walker. So far, not great. The biggest contract they've given out in terms of total money and number of years to a free agent, Josh Hader, working out fantastically right now. It's year two of five, but working out great right now. Spend that money.
It's hard for me to criticize really much about the Astros when they're doing what they're doing. And Espada especially has this team sitting at a spot where they really have no business being if you just look at it on paper. So they've done a great job with a lot of things. I'm just trying to talk myself into stop being such a nerd about like thinking about all the possible ways this could go wrong. They just won the Phillies series last night.
They
haven't lost a series in 9 or 10 series over the last several weeks. It's just been impressive as hell.
There's nothing in the division that scares me, and that's what probably lets me sleep at night about the Astros. Is I'm not the Mariners don't scare me, and certainly the Rangers and the Angels right now, and the Athletics obviously are not really scary. So that's, you know, look, the Astros are going to play the 81st game of the season today. If they win this game today, they're on pace for 96 wins. They won the division with 88 wins last year. So they're in really good shape right now.
And once they're done with the Dodgers, they have a very easy schedule compared to the rest of the league.
Yeah.
So this stretch here to win this series versus the Phillies and potentially sweep it is really, really big. Yep. And then, you know, with another couple tests with the Cubs and the Dodgers coming up in the two of the next three series, getting your, I wonder where the line has shifted to the Astros, because what was it at the beginning of the year?
It was 80. It's season win total you're talking about.
Yeah,
it was 86.5 at the beginning of the year.
Yeah,
it's got to be 90 now at least. I would say they're on pace for 94, 95 wins right now. So with an easy
congratulations in advance to all of you who took the over on the Astros.
Absolutely, you're going to win your bet, man. They're on pace for 95 wins, and they've got the easiest schedule in baseball. What could possibly go wrong? I'm having flashbacks now to the end of 2023 where they could have clinched the division with like 2 weeks left in the season, but they're losing to the A's and they're losing to the Royals at home. Like, okay, so we can't get too caught up in things yet. John Heyman tweeted this. John Heyman, longtime MLB reporter, tweeted this yesterday. Astros and star shortstop Jeremy Peña had been in serious long-term contract talks before his recent agent switch to Scott Boras, as I said on MLB Network. That's Heyman talking. Those talks are now on hold, at least for now. Peña is second in MLB behind Aaron Judge with a 4.5 wins above replacement. Just to add to that, Seth, if just for more detail, credit Ari Alexander of KPRC2 here in Houston. The Astros and Jeremy Peña, not only were they deep in contract discussions, they had numbers on the table that Ari was able to get. 5 years, $105 million, which I'm assuming would have bought out the last 2 years of arbitration for Jeremy Peña, 2026 and 2027. And then there would have been three more years after that, whereas you know Peña wouldn't have been a free agent until his early mid-30s after that. But he would have been guaranteed $105 million.
Yeah.
This version of Jeremy Peña is going to be making a whole lot more than $105 million someday.
Yeah,
if this keeps up.
It's in the... Given a guy an extension, well, he's still young or has multiple years of arbitration less, it works really well early in a guy's career with second or third, where they haven't gotten huge money yet, and maybe they're not so sure about exactly what their value is. For Peña, who might have been coming into this season kind of thinking, like, I don't, like, what am I really as a baseball player? I still have a lot to prove. Would have been a lot easier to get him maybe at that sweet spot or juncture than after he's playing the way he has so far. And then has a conversation with Boras somewhere along the way, and Boras convinces him of the beauty of free agency and how crazy it turns teams and how much they're willing to pay.
This feels like, to me, like a situation where Peña and his prior representation had been talking with the team. They're down the road. He's got a deal in front of him, and he starts to think to himself, maybe I need to let my uncle, who's an agent, look at this and just make sure. And in this case, Scott Boras is the uncle. My real life example of this, Seth, for me was right out of college. I went and I got my first job, and I went and got my first car. Like the week I got out of college, I went to a car dealership and bought my first car myself.
Yeah.
And I was a sucker for everything. Like I wasn't negotiating. I was buying the rust proofing. They even sold me a life insurance policy alongside of it. Like, hey, this is only $79 extra a month. And just in case something happens to you, this will take care of your pay. And I knew nothing about life insurance at that time. Like, sounds like a really good idea to me. So I didn't bite on the car yet. I brought home the proposal. And at that point, I was right home from college. So I'm still living with my dad. And I'm like, Dad, just take a look at this. And my dad's like looking at it. He's like, God, you're the worst. Yeah. You're such a sucker. So my dad goes back to the dealership with me.
Yeah.
And we take this out and we take that out. And that feels like Scott Boras. Scott Boras feels like Paul Pendergast in this situation where he's like, oh, whoa, Jeremy. Look at your OPS the last 3 months. Look at your OPS since you became leadoff. Look how much better your defensive metrics are now. You're the 2022 Gold Glover again. No. We are ripping this up right now.
But for wins above replacement, you're the second or third best player in the league.
Not on your team.
Yes,
in the league. Yeah.
No, so. And that's one thing Boras is really good at doing is kind of stroking the numbers to show exactly where, like, okay. Sometimes it's a matter of, you laid it out perfectly, I think. Is it sometimes with Boras, it's that he does a good job of explaining to players how much they're actually worth and how much they should be worth.
Yeah.
So that's where it, I think Peña, looks like Peña was open to signing an extension at one point and probably still would be. It's just that whatever the Astros were offering him, it wasn't enough. And then Boras is unlikely to tell. It's very unlikely that Boras comes in and tells Bregman, actually, you know, that was probably your best offer and you should have taken it.
Yeah, the two guys that Boras has most publicly represented for the Astros that have left, obviously he represents Altuve and Lance McCullers, who both stayed. But he represented Alex Bregman and still does represent Carlos Correa. They both got almost the same identical deal leaving here. Bregman last year and Correa, the first deal he got from Minnesota. Correa got 3 years, $105 million with opt-outs after each year. Bregman got 3 years, $120 million. So adjust for inflation, it's probably the exact same deal with opt-outs after each year. If Peña were to hit free agency after this year, let's say this was his walk year, I don't think that happens with Jeremy Peña. He's got no injury history. He's an ascending player. He would still be young. The good news for Astro fans, you're still getting two more years out of Jeremy Peña after this. We don't have to worry about this for another couple years.
One of the replies to Heyman's tweet was, don't these players learn? Scott Boras absolutely torpedoed Bergman's earning potential by playing these games. I'll give him a pass on the Bergman part. I still, mine autocorrects to Bergman sometimes with Bregman. Bregman could have accepted one of those deals that actually had more guaranteed money. Bregman liked the flexibility and having those option years.
The Astros offered more guaranteed money.
Yeah. The ability to, so it's not like Boras torpedoed Bregman's value.
No.
Boras got him a deal where he basically had the option to do a bunch of one-year deals where he has all the control and a lot of guaranteed money. So there's still upside there. He gambled on himself, but still with a boatload of guarantees.
No doubt. Okay, so the question, real quick before we get to the break here, knowing now what we know, that Peña was, it sounded like, you know, down at least in the red zone, if not down to the 5-yard line possibly, with a contract extension. They had numbers on the table, Seth. And he was looking at him and decided to switch to Boras. Do you feel better, worse, or way worse that Jeremy Peña is going to be a Houston Astro long term?
I feel do I feel better than before I found out that he was in negotiations, or do I feel better than before he hired Scott
Boras? Well, I don't know. I don't think better is even an option. I'm just doing that thing.
All right. I feel worse. I don't feel drastically worse just because I know that if he genuinely just maybe really likes playing for this team, in this city, for that coaching staff especially, that maybe he is – I think he's still probably open to an extension. It's just – are the Astros willing to, you know, bend to whatever Scott Boras thinks it's going to be? Boras has shown that he's willing to.
Yeah.
Like, Boras didn't talk McCullers or Altuve out of signing extensions with the Astros.
No. It is better is in there just as a token option. It's impossible to read this story and feel like, oh, I feel like this Pena's coming back. They had numbers on the table. Pena looks at the numbers. This is how I read it. And then goes to Boras, and all of a sudden, communication on a contract shuts down. You know, like that's, at the very least, they got to hunker down and be ready for some hard negotiations no time soon, probably closer to Pena's walk year.
He would have been right if he had accepted that extension, and it would be to kick in a couple of years, right? Yeah. It would, he would have still been...
No. It would have kicked in probably immediately. It probably would have kicked... Those contracts kick in and buy out the arbitration years.
Okay, they buy out the arbitration and they go. Okay. Yeah. It would have made him like the 10th or 11th highest paid shortstop.
He's doing the right thing for himself right now. No question. Yeah. I mean, he's arguably... I think inarguably a top five shortstop this season. Does he sustain it? That's a big question. All right. Payne and Pendergast. Hey, Kevin Durant. We got more Kevin Durant stuff. Rudy T weighing in on Kevin Durant. That's fun. And Vanessa Richardson had the breadcrumbs for this all the way back in February. This is a fun listen, knowing how this whole thing played out with the Rockets and Kevin Durant. We do that next. Stay there.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.